Well, this morning, we're going to talk about a subject that may be very personal for some of you. And we're going to tell an even more personal story, a story about God meeting us in difficult places and then bringing about hope and bringing about change. The subject is waiting for blessing. And I think you'll know what we're talking about here. It's waiting for that prayer that you have been praying for a very long time, and it has not come true. Waiting for God's favor in your life. Waiting for that which you have expected to be true in your life, but you have not yet received it. And in the moment of waiting, in that time of waiting, everything seems so far out of reach. What you're waiting for just seems like it is unattainable. It's almost as if God is withholding that blessing from you. And this kind of waiting is a waiting that just produces an ache deep inside. The kind of ache that makes it difficult to experience any joy or to rejoice about anything when you're in the middle of it. Have you ever experienced that kind of waiting that just leads to this aching of the soul? I know some of you have. It's an ache that Baron Hannah experienced in our reading today, and she is revered by many people because she endured this kind of long suffering while waiting for God's blessing. And I know that her story, waiting for the blessing of a child, is uncomfortably familiar to some of you here this morning. And it might even be your story, or it might be the story of a daughter or a son and daughter-in-law, or a sister, or someone that you know and love dearly. And because it is such a personal subject, we're going to do things a little bit differently today. We're first of all going to talk about Hannah and her story, and what God has to say to us in this about this process of waiting. And then we're going to hear a story from Jenny Behrens, a member of the Christ Church family. And I think in the end that you'll be encouraged, I hope, by both of these stories and find them helpful. Now, both of these stories have kind of similar movements, if you will. It starts with this long waiting that leads to this bitter pain. And then there's a simple choice that leads then to a hidden joy. Let's talk about this bitter pain for a moment. We're told in this reading today that Hannah was just very, very miserable. She was miserable. And the English translation really doesn't capture the depth of her pain and her raw emotions. You know, she prayed, it says, to the Lord in anguish. You know, it's a word that means it's just a piercing pain of the soul. She wept bitterly. She shrieked. She wailed. She cried out to the Lord. In verse 6, it said she was provoked and irritated. It's a word that means to roar in anger. So you kind of get the picture, right, of Hannah? I mean, this is a woman who is in deep, deep pain. I mean, she is shrieking. She's wailing. She's roaring in anger to God. Why? Because she was childless. She wanted to have a child, and she could not get pregnant. Now, we can, I think, sympathize with Hannah to an extent, but to really, I think, understand the many layers of what Hannah was experiencing, we really need to understand it in the cultural context, in the historical and even the economic context of the time, actually. Let's talk about economics for a minute. So in ancient society, there was pretty much a direct correlation between the size of your family, the number of children that you had, and your wealth, your prosperity. And it's a very simple economic equation, right? It's like the more children you have, the greater your workforce, the more production, the greater your wealth. But the opposite was true as well. The fewer children that you had, you lacked wealth. And it's not just that, but only when you think about 4 out of 10 children, only 4 out of 10 making it into adulthood, your children were kind of like an insurance policy. I mean, there was nothing to fall back on. You know, there was no 401ks, no Social Security, no safety net. So when you grew old, you depended upon your children to care for you. Without kids, you would likely starve to death. So Hannah's desire for children was more than an emotional response, more than kind of a natural response of motherhood, desiring motherhood. You know, having children in some cases was a matter of life and death. And women who had many children, wealth, they were made heroes, really, by their family or by their tribe or by their nation. But women who could not have children, I mean, you hate to say it, but it's true. I mean, they were considered worthless in their own eyes, but also in the eyes of others. So you put this enormous cultural pressure upon the natural pressure of a woman who's struggling to get pregnant, and you begin to see what Hannah is going through and what she's experiencing, and how many who were like her were forced into an idolatry of family and lots of children. They functioned like idols, and it's almost as if you couldn't live without them. This cultural system that she was in, it was almost inevitable that it would lead to that. That is, women would come to idolize large family and children. One commentator put it this way: barrenness in an ancient text or narrative is the effective metaphor of hopelessness. For without children, there was no foreseeable future for yourself, your family, or for your people. Barrenness meant there was no human power to invent a future at all. Now, some of you may remember a few weeks ago we talked about a little bit about idols, saying that that they often begin as a good thing that end up becoming the ultimate thing, right? And they're destructive because we begin worshiping this idol, we begin loving this idol in place of God, and it becomes the center of our life, the center of our attention, and the center of our affections. We can't imagine life without it. And that's to say that if we don't get that which is that we desire, that has become our idol, it's almost as if we can't, there is no future and there is no reason to live. And that's the key to understanding Hannah's pain that she's in. She's miserable because she can't get pregnant. But why was it so bitter? Why did it hurt so much? Because her natural desire to be blessed with children had become an idol. It had become the thing that she worshipped the most. Now, we live in a very different world from Hannah. We know that. Different pressures, different values. But I think, you know, our cultural system creates, our cultural system still creates, and I think our hearts even entertain idols that unseat God from his rightly place in our lives. And many of these things are rooted in good things, right? I mean, there's nothing wrong with desiring a family. But when these good things, when these blessings become the ultimate thing in our life, the thing that gives us our only significance and worth, our only meaning and purpose, and when they seem so far out of reach, it can create this bitterness and this pain that Hannah was going through. Now, I acknowledge that I do empathize with those of you who have gone through this and those who we know and I know who are going to struggle to have children but can't. But I can't really put myself in that place. I can't really understand it, right? And so we have invited Jenny Behrens to share a little bit about her story and how it kind of connects up with this whole subject of waiting, of pain, waiting on God's blessing. So let's run this video of Jenny for just a minute.
So I was familiar with Hannah's story for years before I became well acquainted with her pain. My husband, Dean, and I had been in our late 20s, and we had a 14-month-old daughter when we decided to try to grow our family again. And we just always kind of assumed that we would have these kids, two or three or even four, back to back to back. And we loved the role of parenting, and I had even quit my job when Joanna was 18 months old so that I could stay at home with her and all the rest of these babies that we were going to have. But a month turned into a few months, and then a few months turned into a year, and then two, and then three, and we've been experiencing second infertility for 4 years now. And at first, we really we're not that worried because we already had one kid and we just thought it would come along naturally. But it didn't, and no doctor could really tell us why. So all of our friends were having their second and third and even fourth babies, and we just felt stunted. We were waiting and waiting on God, and it was a bitter waiting. I felt like this little kid who'd been left at school, and all of her friends had been picked up, and I was just sitting on the curb, watching the road, waiting for God to show up. And it was a really bitter time. My wandering thoughts were always anxious, and I literally felt heartsick. Every pregnancy announcement, every baby shower was a reminder that God was giving everybody else what we desperately wanted, that He was just withholding this simple, common blessing from us.
Waiting for blessing. We're not just talking about, waiting for a child, but that's the story that we're dealing with today. Let's go back to Hannah's story for just a minute. Kind of the second movement, if you will, in this story is actually a simple choice that Hannah makes that then leads to a hidden joy. We're going to talk more about that in a minute. But we know that Hannah was very miserable in the beginning, but by the very last verse that Kate read, it says her face was no longer downcast. What happened? What changed in that story? We're going to come back to that in a minute, but there are a few other things about this story, about Hannah's story, that I think are important. First of all, Peninnah taunts her. I have children, you don't. What are you if you're not a mother, right? It's a cruel temptation for Hannah. It's a cruel temptation for her to be trapped in her bitter disappointment of worshiping the idol of motherhood. And then her husband offers, no doubt, and he doesn't know what to say, right? He's a husband. And he's trying with the best of intentions. And so he says, Hannah, you know how much I love you? I can't even imagine what you're going through, but doesn't my love mean anything for you? You don't have to have kids. You can be my loving, beautiful wife. He means the best, okay. But Hannah then looks to her left, and she sees the trap of continuing to build on her life around the idol, continuing down the road of worshiping the idol of motherhood. And she looks to her right, and she sees the trap of continuing to build her life around the idol of being a loving and beautiful wife. And Hannah does something that's remarkable. She chooses neither one of those. She chooses something different, and she makes a radical choice. She makes a revolutionary choice. The text says, once they had finished eating and drinking, Hannah stood up. Hannah stood up. And in her deep anguish, she prayed to the Lord. She stood up. Now, is that just an insignificant detail? I don't think so. I think that is reflective. That change in posture is reflective of a change in attitude. She is making a decision. She's making a decision to do something about this. And this is where spirituality, where connecting with God gets real. And that is, what is most important to you and me? What are things that give us our identity? Hannah makes that choice. She realizes that her significance and her identity is not to be found in either of these idols that are being thrust upon her by those who love her and her culture. And by standing up, by arising and going to pray to God, she was rejecting these idols and recognizing them as traps. Clearly, there is nothing wrong with desiring, children. Nothing wrong with desiring marriage, being a loving and beautiful wife. But They can be trapped when they become the only source of our identity, the only source of our significance. The second thing that Hannah did was that she prayed. She prayed, and it was a messy prayer, and no doubt it was a wailing kind of prayer. We've already touched upon that. Lord Almighty, if you look upon your servant's misery and remember me. It's a good prayer. It's a great prayer because she addresses God in all of his majesty. Lord Almighty, Lord of hosts, Lord of all creation, Lord of the heaven and the earths. This prayer is all about God, and it's all about his transcendence, his omnipotence, his greatness, his holy otherness. That's a great prayer. And then Hannah does something that is also remarkable. She assumes that her broken heart, that the broken heart of this barren, obscure, rural woman matters to a great God, to a transcendent God. And Hannah realizes that this infinitely great God is also infinitely tender. She says, remember me, Lord. Help me. Now, I think the message for you and I here in this, one of them, is that we can view our pain, our waiting, our suffering as obstacles to prayer. Or we can view them as ways into prayer, where we can pour our hearts out to an infinite God. It's seemingly a simple choice, but it can make all the difference in the world. I'd like to hear from Jenny again and just hear the rest of her story.
So when the realization that I might never get pregnant again really began to sink in, I knew I had to make a decision. I could let my prayers stay limited to these kind of desperate pleas for God to give us a baby. Please, God, please let it be this month, please. Or I could start to let him transform me, to take those deepest desires and those very real and raw prayers and bring something new out of them and out of me. It was probably about over a year into it when I was reminded of Mary's words. When this angel comes and basically wrecks her life, he tells her that she's going to get pregnant. So she has the opposite problem that I do, but her circumstances are totally different. And in that moment, her picture for her life had to have completely unraveled. Life was not going to look the way Mary thought it would. And Mary's response was, "Let it be to me as you have said." And so that really became my prayer, those three words, let it be. Jesus, let this be more to me than what it appears. Let it be more to me. Whatever it is you want to teach me, whatever you want to change in me, whatever you want to take out, let it be. And from that moment on, I listened to the Beatles song on repeat for months and months and months. And I did that because I kind of needed these constant reminders to look to Jesus, to look to Jesus on the cross, to his pain and his suffering, and ultimately the way all of those things were redeemed and reversed. So I did things to remind myself. Like I just listened to sermons while I was doing the dishes or cleaning around the house. I wrote in a prayer journal all the time. About that ache and about what I felt. I talked to friends and prayed with them, and they prayed for me, and I prayed for them. I read biographies of Christians who were denied the things that I take for granted, and I read the Bible a lot and let it encourage me, let the words sink in. And those reminders just kept me focused on Jesus and that he is always doing something new. He's always taking something bad and flipping it around. If God could do that to the cross, to the worst story in the history of humanity and make it into the most beautiful thing. Surely he could do that with my little story. And over time, I really was being transformed. It wasn't something that just like bubbled up naturally in me. It was by God's grace that I was able to choose again and again, every minute sometimes, to pray that prayer, let it be. I remember really feeling the weight of this transformation. One time I was talking to a friend, kind of describing how alive I was feeling to God, and I said, literally, I just feel so fertile right now. We both just kind of stopped, like neither one of us could really believe that I had said those words, but we realized that God was giving me an even better fertility than what I was asking for. This really was better. And it wasn't that I quit praying that I would get pregnant or I didn't want it anymore. I still desperately wanted it, but I wanted him even more than these ideals that I had for my family. Another big turning point for me was this sudden realization, and it really was sudden, that I was not this little kid sitting on the curb waiting for God to come and pick her up. I was waiting, but I was not waiting on God to show up, because God was right there sitting on that curb with me. And it was like he was whispering, wait for it, just wait for it. So instead of just sitting there waiting for him to get there, I realized that I was waiting with him for his timing. And that realization, that it was like he had this gift for me that he couldn't wait for me to unwrap, but we both just had to wait, really transformed the waiting itself. It gave me so much more anticipation and hope and joy, even in the midst of waiting. But 4 years later, we have a really obvious blessing in our family too. On November 1st of last year, Dean and I began the adoption process, and we met with a social worker so that we could do a home study and even be eligible to adopt. And it took a lot of emotional and financial resources. And we felt like Abraham, like we were setting out and we didn't know where we were going and we didn't know if we would ever even arrive. But exactly 9 months later, to the very day from our first meeting with the social worker, our son Winston was born. And we got to be there for the delivery, and we got to take him home that same weekend. And he is such a blessing, and his story is such a blessing. But even if our family had stayed the same size, I would still characterize this season as a blessing in disguise, not without heartache and grief, but ultimately a blessing. Because of this whole experience, I really have experienced his love as something that does not fail us. He never stops working things for good. He never stops redeeming them or reversing them. He just never stops. And our pain and our suffering is real, and it can be so loud sometimes, but it does not have the final word. He does. And at the very end of it all, he will not leave us disappointed.
God can transform our waiting. I heard Jenny say that. You know, these stories I think are so inspiring. Hannah's story and Jenny's story. You know, Hannah standing up to pray, standing up, deciding to do something. Jenny's prayer, let it be, Lord. You know, these are women who love the Lord and who trust the Lord. You know, these are women who are free from idols because they have allowed their deepest desires to be transformed by this infinite Father. Now, maybe some of you are saying, you know, I can't do that. Yeah, you can. And maybe some of you are thinking, I don't really have the power to do that. Yes, you do. And do you know why? Hannah gives another prayer, gives us a hint in another prayer that's also recorded in 1 Samuel. I want to read part of this to you. Hannah says, "My heart rejoices in the Lord. In the Lord, my horn, my strength is lifted high. The Lord brings death and makes alive. He brings down to the grave and raises up. He raises the poor from the dust and lifts the needy from the ash heap and seats them with princes and has them inherit the throne of honor." In other words, another prayer of the heart. But what Hannah is saying there is that God is in the business of reversing things. He's in the business of reversing things, and he can reverse things in your life and in my life. God lifts the needy from the ash heaps and raises them to places of honor. So what? So everything. So everything. Because did you know that Jesus was crucified outside the gates of Jerusalem? He was crucified next to a trash dump where people would bring their trash and they would burn it. And there would be these heaps of ashes. Jesus went down into the ash heap so that you and I could be raised with him to places that we can't even imagine, the heavenly realm. God is in the business of reversing things. He can bring salvation out of suffering. He can bring life out of death. He is in the business of reversing things. And that's the good news. And the good news is that you and I have something that Hannah did not have. We have the cross, which is the indisputable sign that God can bring life out of death. And we can learn from Hannah's story and from Jenny's story that God can change our deepest desires. As we redirect our affections away from these desires that have become idols that we worship and direct them to God, direct our affections and our attention to God, he can change our deepest desires. I loved it when Jenny said, "It wasn't that I didn't want to get pregnant or stop praying for that. It was that I wanted him even more than my ideals for a family." That's breakthrough, friends. That is breakthrough. You know, what are you waiting for now? Are you suffering about anything? I mean, aren't we all, right? Aren't we all? Isn't there something in your life and in mine that is not right, and that we're waiting for God to make it right? We're waiting for fulfillment, for deliverance, for that job. We're waiting for God's favor, for his blessing. And the message of Jenny and of Hannah and all of Scripture is that you and I can stand up. We can arise. We can change our posture and our attitude, and we can go to God in prayer. You and I can take our deepest emotions and we can pour them out. We can pray them out to our infinite Father in heaven. And our Father says, "Your significance and your meaning is not to be found in those things that you desire that have become idols. But your significance, your identity is in me. It's in me." So what? So everything. Let's pray. Let's pray. Let's pray.